This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. We got a great show coming up today. You guys are in the right spot. Have a seat, relax, and enjoy your day, because coming your way at 3 o'clock, Mitch Haniger of your Seattle Mariners will join us. I'm looking forward to talking some baseball, Dave. Can't wait to talk to Mitch. You and I had a great in-person interview with him on the field this past season, maybe one of our favorite interviews we've done.
Yeah.
Just a good dude coming off his career best season. Just looking forward to that. So that's at 3. John Clayton at 4. And then John Forslund, the voice of your Seattle Kraken, at 5 o'clock, who really is, despite the down season for this team. I mean, you know, they just ended a 9-game losing streak. He's a reason to tune in. He is so good.
Amazing.
He is so good and so entertaining to listen to.
That's what I'm going to ask him. I'm going to start off saying, how do you do that? How do you do that so quickly? Because, you know, like Rabel, and, you know, maybe I'll ask him for some tips for Rabel that I can pass on to Steve to make him better.
Well, he's lacking, you feel?
Yeah, a little bit.
He's got to up his game.
No, I mean, you got Forslund, who I love listening to, and you just add it to, I guess we're all biased here, right? But, I mean, you add it to the list of Kevin Calabro, you know, Steve Rabel, fill in whatever I miss, Bob. But I mean, there's just been so many, you know, all of the Mariners. We got Aaron Goldsmith, Rick Riz, Dave Sims. I mean,
Dave,
I just
Niehaus,
feel like
house, yeah, Bob Niehaus. Blackburn. Yeah. I mean, you can go Bob Rondo. You've had a, and the one thing I'll say is you're right. You grow up with these guys, you're biased, but you know, in this business, you move around a bit, and I've had the chance to live in Chicago and Los Angeles and St. Louis. So I've heard all of the voices in those cities, and I don't feel like I'm being biased. Yeah, this is my hometown. It's where I was from and grew up. But, you know, I heard Vin Scully out there in L.A. He's one of the all-time greats. There's some great voices in St. Louis as well. But I don't know. This city has had a gold mine of play-by-play voices in all of their sports. They really have. And they stack up against anybody I've ever heard across the country.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that from you. Obviously, you have some perspective in that, having lived in other cities. And I just think Rabel's just the best. I mean, he in the NFL, he does such a good job. I don't like the guy who's, touchdown, Kansas City. That guy drives me a little nuts.
There are a lot of guys with shtick. I don't like John Sterling just makes me nuts. He's the voice of the Yankees on radio. Him and Susan Waldman. Oh, my goodness. What a cringeworthy pair of people calling a game. She's got kind of a Rosie O'Donnell voice, very shrill, nasally, and he's sitting there with a list of little catchphrases he can't wait to unveil. He's, you know, somebody hits a home run, he's got a little nickname for him, and
like A-Bomb from A-Rod. That one,
Robinson Cano, don't you know? Ugh. Just cringe. And then Hawk Harrelson in Chicago was just,
oh, he's a baby. If they lose, I remember Kyle Seager hit a walk-off home run.
Yeah, he doesn't speak.
He just sat there for like 45 seconds, not saying anything.
Yeah, he'll pout. There's a lot of bad out there. Seattle is just loaded with golden voices that aren't, there's no shtick to anybody I can think of that's been through here. It's just what they've done. And even Calabro, he kind of had his stuff, you know, getting on that magic carpet and ride and all that and getting up for the downstroke. But it came in a flow. It didn't sound so preconceived. Like I said, like Sterling is just unlistenable and just gross. I can't do it. So, getting back to Forslund, he falls into a long history of just phenomenal play-by-play voices for teams in this city. He's really good.
He is. And you know, with all the line changes, what is it, every 90 seconds?
I think Lefko said like 45 seconds.
Or is it less than that?
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah, you got all of that. But, yeah, with Calabro, all that his stuff was very organic.
Yeah, it did. So it was different than most people, and very organic. Yeah.
So look, I think we've been blessed here and get a chance to talk to him at 5 o'clock, and he can continue our education of hockey. Also.
Yeah. Well, and I think he wasn't he in Carolina for like 25 years or something. He was there forever. I can't believe they let the guy go. Why would you let a guy like that go? I don't know who they have now, but man, oh man.
Yeah, it was. I was just checking him out, and obviously grew up in Springfield, Mass. Probably a huge hockey fan, so it'll be good to talk to him.
All right, well let's get to the conversation that dominated yesterday, and that was the search for a defensive coordinator. And you know, I was listening to that promo before our show started, and we heard John Clayton say that Clint Hurt is the best D-line coach in the league. And I'm curious. What is that based on? I guess that's just his opinion, but the Seahawks certainly don't have the best D-line in the league. That's very clear. Clint Hurt may be the best candidate out there. I don't really know what kind of he's never been a coordinator, so we have no idea what kind of a coordinator he would make. He's in the building. He's certainly one of the candidates. You and I talked about, I would prefer a fresh set of eyes. Somebody from the outside comes in, takes a look at it, gives a fresh perspective on the roster, on how guys are being used, how he would retool the defense and see if he and Pete come to some sort of middle ground, some sort of maybe a compromise between what Pete loves to do and it's Pete's defense and what this person, whoever that may be, Ed Donatell or Sean Desai or any of these other names we're hearing. I would prefer that. But it felt like you would go with Clint Hurt. Like if you were the guy in charge making that decision, would that be it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because then here's the thing. You would go your second year in a row with a coordinator who's never done it before.
Yeah.
You know, so, and, you know, when you look at the three names, so Clint Hurt, Ed Donatell, and then Sean Desai, you've got kind of from one to the other. First of all, I feel like the most familiar with this defense and Pete Carroll would be Clint Hurt, because he's since, I want to say 2019, he's been the assistant head coach as well.
D-line coach since 2017.
Right. And so, and actually he's been the assistant head coach that entire time. So, which assistant head coach is, I think he designates somebody who he thinks has head coach potential. And, you know, Clint definitely does. He really does. We're talking D-line. I keep wanting to call him Cliff because we're getting Cliff Averill, but... You know, if you look at the degrees now, on the other extreme is what you're talking about, Bob, which I don't, you know, strongly disagree with getting a fresh set of eyes. And that would be Sean Desai, because he's only been a coordinator for 1 year. He doesn't really have, he's not part of any of the, doesn't know Pete Carroll. I mean, I saw a picture somewhere where Pete and Ed Donatell, I think it was from this year, the Denver game, where they're taking arms around each other. He knows, I mentioned how his son Tom Donatell was a quality control guy for the Seahawks. He's now with the Chargers. So, and you know, there's definitely a connection there, but this Sean Desai would be your guy, Bob, as far as fresh eyes go, because you know, he's a safety coach for the Bears 2019 and 20. And he was like a football ops guy at the U at University of Miami, running back coach at Boston College, but 13 through 18 with Chicago, he was a quality control guy. And then, you know, kind of worked his way up to position coach. And now 2021, he's your defensive coordinator. And I'm looking at his numbers. We're pretty good. I mean, that was a pretty good defense. They were not very good against the run. They were 23rd. They're giving up 125. But they had the number 3 pass defense, number 6 overall yards, that Chicago defense. And then, you know, as far as points, they gave up lots of points. But I'd have to go and look how many pick sixes were thrown by the offense, because they had a young guy in there in Fields. But, yeah, I mean, you kind of go from one to the other. The guy with the most experience by far, though, is Ed Donatell, because he was a defensive coordinator all the way back in 2000. And I went back, and that was 2000 through 2003, so 4 years in Green Bay. And I went and looked at when he was in Atlanta. It's amazing, Bob, when you look at the numbers. There were so many teams that were right at or close to giving up 300 yards per game.
Yeah.
And then you see those numbers every year start to grow because of all the penalties and all the ways that, you know, the pass game has developed and things like that. But, you know, and you look at him in Atlanta, Ed was decent, you know, kind of middle of the road. But, you know, mostly he was pretty good in Denver last year. He was number 8 in total yards given up, and I'm doing kind of the same thing as what I did with Ken Norton, just looking at yards, pass yards, run yards, points, and he was number 3 in points, allowing just 19 points a game. And that was the other thing, you know, you saw early on when I was looking at the numbers from 2004 or 5, there was teams that were holding other teams to like 13, 14, lots of in the teens, you know, mm-hmm. in the top 10. Now it's hard to do that. So holding a team to 19 points, that was number 3 in the league. That's pretty good. Middle of the road as far as run goes. But as far as yards given up and total yards, top 10 as far as Ed Donatell's defense there in Denver.
You guys can text in 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Here's a good question for you. And this falls in line with my questions about passing game coordinators, defense, you know, run yeah. game coordinators. Maui Rob says, can you explain quality control coaches? What do they do? That's a good question, Rob. I have no idea.
They go get coffee for the coaches. I saw one time a guy over at the, you know, the little mini mart across the street. And this is this was like 8 years ago, across the street from the VMAC is what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Like yeah, Dino's and all that.
Yeah, and I don't think it was a quality control coach, but this guy came over and he had like $132.65, which is exactly, that would have bought him, he bought like 15 cans of chew.
Oh my goodness.
That he was taking back over to, for the coaches, because, you know, there's probably four or five of them. So, but I don't think it's that. It's just, you know, looking at film, kind of, you know, being kind of a, I don't want to say an errand boy, but like, you know, a lot of times, like if I'm looking up stats or things like that, I remember, I used to have some of the interns do that, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, just that kind of stuff, looking at film, kind of, just doing whatever. I mean, I feel like it's a good way to go. Jim Mora started out as, he was like the first quality control guy in the NFL. He
so had like just a set of eyes and ears just to kind of be involved everywhere.
Yep. And it's so a young guy typically.
Yeah. Okay. So not a defined role. Like you're responsible for this group of players or this part of the game. You're just kind of an everything guy, utility guy.
Well, and then you look, somebody, you know, if you talk to Pete, he might go, oh, no, we assigned that guy to specifically do this and that. But that's just what I've always known. They're out, just an extra set of eyes, like you said, out there, you know, watching whether it's offensive or defensive.
And then I'll give you one more question here, Dave. I'm just firing questions at you from the texters here.
You know why? Because you're question man.
I am question man. I think it's a fair question. I mean, I understand this one. I can predict your answer. But the 469, which I'm not sure, where's 469?
Let's look it up here.
My question would be, would we benefit going to a 3-4 defense for two reasons? One, to leave Bobby Wags, give him less responsibility coverage-wise. Also, it would benefit Jamal Adams. He'd be the next Troy Polamalu.
Yeah, first of all, that's Dallas. And no, I mean, that's a pretty drastic change.
You played in both, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the 3-4 would... So, yeah, somebody asked me that a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Rabel and Riley, who's our spotter, Riley Michaels. And a 3-4 in its most basic, I mean, you can move the guys around. But for Bobby, that would mean he would have an uncovered guard on, you know, head up. So, I mean, you had to take on guards.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't do that anymore. So, and, you know, he'll sometimes, you know, kind of, catch it and back up a little bit or whatever. But I think in the most basic form, that's where you wouldn't want to put Bobby. And where you would want to put Bobby is exactly where they put him this year, where you got three guys in the interior that are sucking up all the blockers. So, and it paid off because he did get a lot of tackles, but they gave up way too many yards. So no, I don't think so. I mean, you know, Pittsburgh runs a version of a 3-4 and they, you know, they have guys here that could do that. I mean, you know, as far as being an outside linebacker, I don't think they'd be very happy about it, though.
Yeah.
Like Darrell Taylor, you know, those guys, like he said, you know, sacks get you paid.
That's right.
I don't want to drop into coverage, man. It's frustrating.
And then what would that do for Dunlap? You know,
yeah, same.
How does that impact him? Not in a positive way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he could be like, you know, a tackle. And those guys are really good. I mean, those like Jacob Green and Jeff Bryant, those guys were having to hold the edge a lot of times and just lining up head up on a tackle. You know, Bruce Smith was in a 3-4 most of his just to give perspective to how good of a football player that guy was. He's got 200 sacks. It's the NFL record. I don't think anybody's gonna break it. And he played that defensive end in the 3-4 defense for most of his career. Jeez. So, I mean, it's not like he's coming off the edge and just beating one guy. But that's where you put Carlos Dunlap. I mean, a tight end cannot block him. No way. You'd be crazy. And mm-hmm. then he can beat most tackles. So, although DJ Humphreys, I was watching him in the Ram game, and I think Carlos beat him for a couple of sacks, but he was getting beat by everybody. I used to think he was a pretty good tackle, but yeah, I just think that would be a really a drastic move. I mean, he's a 4-3 guy. Pete is.
Hey, just a couple of voices that weighed in on the search for a new defensive coordinator, and our guy Mark Schlereth, who's with us every Tuesday, was on with us yesterday, and if you missed that conversation, he's always fantastic. So you can check it out on the podcast page at 710sports.com. Just click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It'll be right there. But he's so good. But we asked him, you know, sort of, hey, do you go in-house or do you go, you know, fresh set of eyes, somebody from the outside? Here's what he said about that.
There's always guys in your building that you really like and all that. I just think that coaching perspective, from a player coaching perspective, that freshness, that you know, that ability to disagree and not be disrespectful, but discerning opinions and, you know, and finding a way to mesh that stuff together, I think is vitally important in coaching in general.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that? I got a text from Ray, because Ray Roberts, who we're going to have on Friday.
Friday, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, buckle up, because we're going to have Dave Craig at 5 o'clock.
All right. You got my hand on the dump button already.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'm just going to kick back. I'm going to instigate. I'm going to play the Brock Heward role. I'm going to instigate and then just lean back and let you two go at it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm like, and then Sam Merriman, who also played for the Seahawks, he was there on the other end of the phone because they're business partners and everything. And, you know, and Sam's like, yeah, he was arguing with me yesterday. And like, he's arguing with me right now. And I said to Dave, I'm like, there seems to be a common denominator. But
love that guy.
Yeah, he's great. And he's rehabbing from a rotator cuff surgery. Oh, okay. So, yeah, he's just laying around, not doing anything. But
so he'll be with us Friday, Ray Roberts Friday. It's going to be good stuff.
But Big Ray sent me a text last night because, like I said, we coached together, and he says, yeah, you got to be able to bench guys. You got to fire guys, you know, and that's what a fresh set of eyes. You're starting to talk me into it, Bob. Now, all of a sudden, I'm like starting thinking, yeah, I mean, you come in here, you don't know what anybody's reputation is or anything like that. You're just looking at, okay, yeah, like you said, fresh set of eyes on Carlos Dunlap and on Bobby Wagner, on Jordan Brooks, on, you know, Jamal Adams. So, yeah, the more I think about it, the more I think also, you know, and decide this guy. And really, Ed Donatell wouldn't be – he's not such a Pete insider. It's just that they're familiar with each other, and I think they kind of know each other's philosophy and things like that. But the Sean Desai guy, I think it'd be a little bit more of a risk just because he's 38 years old, which, you know, there's now, did you see the stat, by the way, of Tom Brady is older than every offensive coordinator that he will face in the playoffs or head coach or something?
Well, yeah, but he's older than McVay.
Yeah. You know. But he's 38 years old, Sean Desai is, and, you know, so a little bit more of a risk because he ran a defense for just 1 year, and Donatell's done it for, what, 11, 12 years, so.
You know that, and he's been the Broncos guy since 2019, and we asked Schlereth about him since he's obviously out there in Denver. Here's what he said about Donatell.
Ed's a great communicator. Ed has great relational skills with his players. You know, I think he fits from the philosophical competition aspect. Won multiple Super Bowls as a coach for Mike Shanahan. I mean, Ed has done a great job in his career over time. But I think the biggest thing is Ed listens to his players, what they like, what they don't like, what they do well. The safeties over there, Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons, absolutely love playing for Ed. So I think that's a good fit.
So there's a ringing endorsement, and then one more, day before we get to take two. Matt Hasselbeck giving his thoughts on Ed Donatell.
Yeah, I don't think Pete would put himself in a box like that. I mean, the name Ed Donatell is exactly the type of person that I would be thinking of. A time-tested, been-there-done-it technician, teacher, has a long history in this league. I mean, in fact, he was the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers on my infamous interception to Al Harris in that wild card game. He's a very aggressive play caller. Kind of, you've seen what they did with Vic Fangio, same kind of stuff.
Alex Bannister. Yeah. I got texts from C-Raj and Kyle.
What a Kyle fine Brown. Memory, his infamous moment. Yeah, but that, I mean, that Donatell, and we'll get to take two in a sec, but he kind of bridges the gap, right? He's kind of familiar, as you said, with Pete, knows, and Schlereth said the same thing, philosophy, they're kind of in line, but he is from the outside. He's been elsewhere. He's been with a different team. He's not a guy who's in the building, who's been listening to Pete every day and been in meetings with Pete every day and, you know, has that familiarity with Bobby and Jamal. And he kind of comes in fresh, so he kind of bridges that gap. He's not the young 38-year-old. He's got the experience. He knows Pete. So yeah, it's kind of best of both worlds in that sense.
Yeah, he's the guy kind of in between those two. In 1995, he was the defensive back coach in Denver. So I know, Ed, I know he does a good job.
All right, let's take two.
Well, Baseball America unveiled their top 100 prospects for 2022 today, and the Mariners have five players on the list. Julio Rodriguez, number two on the top 100. George Kirby is 12. Noel V. Marte, number 18. Matt Brash, 45. And Brandon Williamson is number 83. Now, noticeably absent, Emerson Hancock, who was number 53 last year, but falls out of the top 100 this season.
Did he get hurt? Why would that happen?
They kind of shut him down last year. You know, he was dealing with some stuff, a very small sample size. So I guess not high on Emerson Hancock.
I cannot wait to see Julio Rodriguez.
I know.
Cannot wait.
And Kirby as well. I mean, you read some of the scouting reports on him. I mean, the future looks extremely bright. There's a ton of potential. And yes, none of these are sure things. None of them are. Anybody could wash out. Anybody could pop. We'll see. It's you know, we talk about it every year with the NFL draft. It's a crapshoot. Well, it's an even bigger crapshoot in baseball. Decidedly bigger. So yeah, we'll see what they turn into. But it's just nice to see this level of potential exist within their organization.
Weren't they thinking about bringing up Matt Brash at one point last year? Was it? I thought his name was in the mix.
Yeah, he was there.
He was up. Yeah.
He never pitched, though, during that final week of the season.
Okay.
But he was there. And the NHL has rescheduled all of the Kraken's postponed games. Seattle just came out with a new revised schedule. There were nine postponed with all the COVID postponements at the end of December and January, and seven of them will now be made up in February. So that includes three home games now in the month of February that weren't there. February 9th against Arizona, the 14th against the Maple Leafs, and the 22nd against the Islanders.
Nice. Well, that's good. They're getting them in. Yeah, so you get more hockey. I see everything's scheduled as it was, right? I mean, all the home games are still home games. All the road games are still road games. Yeah.
So what it is, though, is there are only going to be two games in the entire month of February because they're going to go to the Olympics. So the NHL was taking a break.
Right.
So now we get some hockey throughout the month. That'll be nice.
Yeah, these pro sports are finding out ways to get this thing done. But, yeah, obviously the no Olympics makes a big difference. But, yeah, we'll ask John Forslund about that at 5 o'clock.
All right. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate. How does a new defensive coordinator avoid another slow start for this defense? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Mitch Haniger. The one and only Mitch Haniger will join us at 3 o'clock. Looking forward to that conversation very much today. So stay tuned for that. Dave, you just sent me that picture during the break of poor Hoove wearing shoes. Poor guy. Is he walking like the ground is hot, like picking up the feet? Like if you've ever seen somebody who's put like tape on the bottom of a cat's paws and they kind of pull the paws up real quickly off the ground.
I got to do that.
Yeah, it's probably not very nice, but I've seen videos of it. It's kind of funny looking.
Yeah. He hasn't gotten up yet, but yeah, we have hardwood floors all over downstairs, and Shannon puts all these throw rugs down, but we can't, you know, do everyone. So she's given a shot here with, yeah, they got like little rubber booties on the bottom, and it's strapped to his leg.
He looks like he just quit. Like he just said, I'm just laying here. I'm not going to move.
Yeah, but he just, he keeps slipping. So, yeah, we... I wish we put as much money into my health and well-being as we do into my dog. No, I'm kidding.
Who deserves it? He deserves it.
He's a good boy.
He's a good dude. All right. So coming up at the top of the hour, Mitch Haniger will join us on the program. So how do the just looking at the idea of a brand new coordinator coming in here, and the question is, how do they avoid the slow start? And slow is an understatement. What they did last season and this season to start the year was just horrific. And last season in particular, I mean, it was just it was hard to describe what was going on or why it was going on. I still don't even really know why it happened the way that it did. I mean, there was just far too much talent on the roster for them to be as bad as they were. I don't know. Matt Hasselbeck, again, talking about this, feels like Pete's going to want somebody who's going to really design a defense that caters to the players they do have.
I don't know that X's and O's is really what I think Pete will go for. I think it's going to be a little bit more the person, the teaching, the technique, the experience, how quickly and moldable and adaptable are they to in-game adjustments? How moldable are they to the personnel? Quite honestly, the personnel in Seattle is a little unique. You know, you have one safety that is really a great pass rusher, but that's about it. So you need to get him, you know, you need to get him pass rushing and not stuck in man coverage too much. You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
So He's talking about Jamal Adams. I think he's better than just a pass rusher, but okay.
I do too.
That's his take on it. And one more here from Schlereth, who was on with us yesterday, who and I think he nails it, just talking about a coordinator's got to maximize the strengths of his players but minimize the weaknesses.
How do we maximize our players' potential? And then two, how do we minimize or mitigate our weaknesses? And those are the kind of two perspectives that I always look at. And, you know, your former defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, it was interesting talking to him just a couple of weeks ago when he was talking about, hey, one of the things we've done is we've taken that kind of Seattle cover three defense, that match cover three, and we've really run a lot more man-to-man, but we have zoned the middle routes. Like, we've zoned off the shallow crosses. We've zoned off a bunch of – because that's where we're getting hurt.
Shouldn't that be – true of any coordinator, any coach, you're going to maximize what guys do well. You're going to minimize their weaknesses. But I feel like that's exactly the opposite of what they did with this defense last year or this most recent season in particular. And you and I have hammered this in how they used Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams. They didn't accentuate their strengths. It felt like they emphasized their weaknesses.
I think that the focus to me was on Bobby Wagner and getting him freed up. And I think that was just a byproduct. I don't think they did it on purpose, but I think that's what happened. You know, and you can talk about the scheme and everything, and I do agree. I think the biggest challenge, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but to me, I feel like it's pretty easy with Carlos Dunlap that you can get him, you know, lined up in situations where he's going to get a one-on-one. I mean, you can't guarantee it, obviously. But I think the thing with Jamal Adams is going to be interesting. I'm sure they're going to go back and look at 2020 film and how they used him, because you have to get the most out of him. You have to. You paid him way too much money and you gave up way too much. I mean, Bobby was a second round draft choice 10 years ago. You've paid him a ton of money, but as far as draft capital goes, you broke the bank on Jamal Adams with 2 years, and now, especially with the 7-10 record, could have been even better. So I think there's that. Here's what, you know, you talk about fresh eyes. Here's what I would say. You know how they had trouble with the screen play this year?
Yes.
Screens, what every coach will start with is hustle. Now, you got to recognize it and everything like that, but There was a lot of times where I didn't think that the standard as far as how they want to play defense was we are going to hustle. We are going to go from snap to whistle. I mean, there was a double pass that the Seahawks, they foiled it. I mean, it didn't work. I think Jamal Adams actually was the one that stayed back. And I don't think he tipped the pass, but it was an incomplete pass. If you go back and look at that play, Bob, there's like five or six guys that they're not even jogging. I mean, they're like
they were jogging.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, and you, I used to go through and look at, you know, my, there was times where I was watching the game, and that's something you can fall into if you're kind of away from a play, that all of a sudden you're kind of watching what's happening and you're watching somebody else, and then you don't think about running full speed. But man, that has to be a standard. That has to be. And I just, for the first time, that I feel like they're doing so many other things and guys are thinking about so much stuff that's the most basic thing is that you hustle. And that's what Jamal Adams does. If you watch him play versus, you know, I don't know, pick a player. I mean, that guy will fly around the field until the whistle is heard. So, you know, that needs to be the new standard. So we're talking about all these X's and O's. Mm-hmm. Like it was like what Ray, you know, texted me that like, you got to bench guys. You got to go, hey, I don't care how much you get paid. I don't care how much, you know, how many Pro Bowls you've been to. If you're not hustling and you're not hitting and you're not attacking the line of scrimmage, you can't play on this defense.
And the less talented guy behind you may be more effective because
I guarantee you.
He's all effort because he's going to be in his gaps. He's going to do the things that the more talented, physically more gifted player is not doing. So it would seem weird. It would fly in the face of conventional wisdom that I'm going to bench my superstar who's a, you know, 8-time Pro Bowler, all pro for the guy who's played 4 games in his career. But you might get more production out of that guy based on just pure effort and discipline.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and I say that all the time with Ben Burkervin. Everybody thinks he's undersized and everything. He's in the right place all the time. I mean, if I'm a coach, I'm going to find a way to get that guy on the field because you don't even have to worry about him. You know, you know that he's going to be where he is supposed to be and then hustle. And I see that a lot of that out of Cody. I feel like he's one of those guys that runs to the whistle. Jordan Brooks. Certainly. So, I mean, that needs to be the new standard and just say, hey, look, this is at the very end. And really, when you think about it, that's kind of the bare minimum that you should expect out of your players, right?
Well, that's one thing you can absolutely always control 100% of the time
exactly
is your effort,
right.
Is your effort and intensity. Everything else, a lot of that's out of your hands, and you talk about it all the time. And, you know, you could be in the exact right spot and, you know, somebody else doesn't do their job. It blows the whole play apart, what have you. But your intensity and your effort is always 100% in your control. Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah. If I'm the new defensive coordinator, I'm writing two words, hustle, hit. Put that number day one, you know, coming in. This is what we're going to be known as. Because, you know, there are some defenses around the league. I say Tennessee, Lefko, your Titans down there, they will hit you. You know, and I think it reflects their head coach. And, yeah, those are things that you get all the fancy, you know, alignments and, you know, zone and single high safety and all that crap. I'll take a team that hustles and hits.
Yep. All right, coming up, we're going to go through some of the more key names on this Seahawks roster and identify whether they underachieved or overachieved. I feel like there's got to be a middle category, Lefko. There's got to be an achieved.
You know, that's not really a thing.
You can say, okay, he overachieved, but here's why. Or he underachieved because the coach.
You got to make a decision here.
Okay. What if somebody was just like, yeah, that's about, they played well. Is that an overachievement?
I think I picked people who you could legitimately say they did either or.
Okay. All right.
Well, and then we could get listener participation as
well.
Yeah,
we want people to text in. We'll see if we agree that this player overachieved, underachieved. You guys can text in 421-3776, 421-ESPN. We'll do that coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Mitch Haniger of your Seattle Mariners will join us on the program. You'll want to stay tuned for that conversation. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino, and we're going to go through a couple of key individuals from the Seahawks organization, Dave, and just sort of talk through, did they overachieve, or did they underachieve? And let's start with the offensive coordinator. We were going to talk about him earlier, and we got into the whole defensive coordinator conversation. But Shane Waldron, first-time play caller as an offensive coordinator, didn't have a game over 400 yards of offense until week 14, scored 20 points or less in 8 games, obviously dealt with his starting quarterback missing, and then when he came back, was not even close to 100%, lost Chris Carson. I don't know. You could go into the offensive line playing the way that it did for whatever reasons. DK Metcalf playing with an injured foot for the majority of the year. So it's hard to say anything other than underachieved, but I don't know that it's all his fault. In fact, I'm not entirely sure how much was of what he wanted to do was impacted by what we just talked about with the injuries and things like that.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, too, that I'd say on his behalf, because I'm going to answer underachieved just yes. because welcome to the big leagues, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, hey, it's first time offensive coordinator, but still, you got to get it done. But the other thing is not a great record for Geno Smith, he was one and two, but 68% completion percentage, 5 touchdowns and 1 interception. I'd give him credit for that. I'd give him credit for Geno Smith's performance there. So, but as far as, you know, like you said, 20 points or less in 8 games with Russell Wilson, and I know some of those were without him, but still, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. So, yeah, you got to figure out ways to get, you know, DK was frustrated. We didn't see any frustration out of Tyler Lockett, but I was frustrated because there was a couple of times where, like, I don't care what kind of fancy offensive, you know, alignment and scheme you're running, you got to get that guy the ball. And mm-hmm. if it's a high leverage situation, why did I just say that? If it's a third and long or a crucial situation, I mean, you gotta get, you know, throwing it to Penny Hart. I mean, I like Penny Hart and everything, but you know, you got to get the ball to Lockett. So that was another thing that wasn't. You know, wasn't emphasized. So, and then, you know, we talk about, remember when Pete was talking about the sack that Russ took, like that has to be the number one message, you know, and I don't think it was. Now, maybe it was. We don't know that for sure, but it sounded like it wasn't because Pete mentioned that. And, you know, if you're the offensive coordinator, you got to put it on Russ too. I mean, Russ has been playing football longer than that guy's been coaching.
Right.
So, you know, it's on him, but don't take a sack here. So, yeah, I mean, I just think I'm not concerned at all about Shane Waldron. I think that Russ and he have a really good relationship, and I thought he did a pretty decent job. I also think he suffered through a lot of adversity with Russ.
But I think we're in agreement. If we're going to – you got to go one way or the other, so there's no just achieved. Yeah. I've been talked out of that. So it's you either overachieved or underachieved. He underachieved.
Yeah,
he gets some grace. He gets some slack first year, crucial sure. injuries to the most important player on the team. But, yeah, underachieved. All right. Well, let's talk about the other guy that we just touched on, and that's Russell Wilson. Missed games for the first time in his entire career here in a decade. Never missed a game. The only moments he was off the field is, you know, if they brought in somebody to clean up, I think. You know, he just never leaves the field. He never misses practice. It's just what he does. And he missed 3 games this year with a finger injury. And then when he came back, he clearly physically was nowhere near ready as much as he said he was initially. Yeah. But you've talked about who he was before the game, before the injury versus who he was after. He had games where he had below 60% completion. In losses against the Packers, the first matchup with the Cardinals, second game with the Rams, the Bears, and then he was only 57% in the final game versus Arizona, where you look at it and go,
pick.
Yeah, threw a pick, but he had some good throws in that one as well. That was kind of a weird game in that you felt like, yeah, he played pretty well. He looked back to normal, but the completion percentage wasn't there.
Yeah,
so
and that's what I look at is completion percentage and interceptions. And to me, that's where, you know, he had more interceptions. I mean, the first 4 games or 5 games before he got hurt, you know, it was vastly different. So, but, you know, if you want to blame him, you could say, well, maybe he should have known to not come back so early. You know, maybe he should have, that's on him. Say, hey, I'm not ready. I'm not feeling good.
Yeah. But this is an easy one, though, too, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It's not a knock on the... Yeah, these aren't personal shots, or he's washed up. We're just talking about what did the season look like? How did he live up to what he normally is or expectations? No, he underachieved, yeah. And there are reasons for it, obvious reasons for it. But in the grand scheme, in total, you look at it, yeah, he underachieved, yeah. which is unfortunate because the first two guys we talked about are the most important to when it comes to your offense, the coordinator and the quarterback, and they both underachieved. So there you go. And you guys can text in your thoughts on that. 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We're going to continue to go through some key players and debate, you know, whether they're underachievers or overachievers as it pertains to this most recent season. But coming up next, it's a rare treat. It's an interview you don't want to miss. One of our favorite interviews from the past season. He's going to join us once again. Mariners outfielder Mitch Haniger will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.